My name is Lawson Tonden, for those who haven't met us before. I'm a Buddhist monk, as you can see probably. And I was born in Mexico, and I'm visiting here, Raleigh, for some months. So let's see how it goes today. We don't have Geshe-la today, and as you know, he's out. Today I'm going to talk a little bit about the topic was about the FPMT, about our organization and our teachers. And I thought that it would be good to talk also about our tradition. You know, what is the tradition that we follow here at the center? And it will be useful probably to know what type of Buddhism we are studying, or because sometimes we have questions, or it's only me, I don't know, but sometimes we have questions about different types of schools, even different colors of the robe, different statues. So let's talk a little bit about this, and also try to join this, or try to talk at the same time about the FPMT, and of course Lama Sopa Rinpoche that is coming, so it will be good to know a little bit about him, who is him, before he's coming. Yeah? So, in general terms, we talk about Buddhism, or generally speaking about Buddhism, probably the thing that comes to our mind is some Eastern religion, right? Well, the first time we heard about Buddhism, after coming to the center probably, or reading about Buddhism probably, say it's an Eastern religion, Buddhism, and we have different Eastern religions, from Hinduism, Jainism, etc. So, when we talk about Buddhism in Tibetan, they call it Chö, or Dharma in Sanskrit. That means Chö means those that upholds you, or how do you say? Sustain? How do you say? Sustain. Support, yeah, thank you. So support you from falling to suffering. This is Chö in Tibetan. Dharma means, generally speaking, Dharma means in Sanskrit like a teaching for inner transformation. A teacher to develop the mind, or the inner factor. So, when we talk about, specifically about Buddhism, we call it Buddha Dharma. It means the teachings of the Buddha, to transform the mind. This is the meaning. And within the Buddha Dharma, within the Buddhism, there are two principal schools, that are called, we call it the Hinayana tradition, and the Hinayana school, and the Mahayana school. And probably you've heard about this. There are not two different things. It's not that the Hinayanas are there and the Mahayanas are there. In fact, the Mahayana includes the Hinayana. It depends. We call it Hinayana not because it's not like a pejorative description of this term. Hinayana means kind of individual vehicle. And within the Hinayana, there were different schools. 18 schools, they got these divisions. Now the most common and the only one I think that survived is that what we call the Theravada tradition, the Theravada school, that is part of the Hinayana system, Hinayana tenets we call. Then also we have the Mahayana tradition, this is a kind of Buddhism that spreads out up to the north of Asia, including Nepal, Tibet, Bhutan, Sikkim, China, Japan, all this part in Mongolia. Yeah? This part is the Mahayana tradition. And then the Hinayana tradition spread out mostly in the southeast part of Asia. There's Thailand, Burma, Sri Lanka, Cambodia, all these parts, Laos. So the Tibetan Buddhism, as you can see, belongs to the Mahayana school. It's the northern tradition, we call it also. And within the Tibetan Buddhism, there are four schools, or four orders, we can say it, four orders, four divisions, that are the Nyingma tradition, the Sakya tradition, the Kagyu tradition, and the Sakya, and the Gelug tradition. Nyingma, Kagyu, Sakya, Gelug. The tradition that we study here mainly is the Gelug tradition. That is the fourth, and the most new of this fourth. It's interesting because all the traditions, you know, to know a little bit about the Tibetan Buddhism, is that it's not that all the traditions, that the traditions are kind of against each other. No? It's not like this. It is what is funny about, well, not funny, interesting about the Lupa tradition, that is our tradition, is that the founder, that was Lama Tsongkhapa, we have it here, it's in the center, with the black, with the yellow hat, no? And his two main disciples. About the Gelugpa tradition, Tsongkhapa took teachings from all the different schools, the different lineages. Nyingma, Kagyu, Sakya. And then finally, there was no Gelug at that time. For example, Tsongkhapa got ordained with the Sakyapa, with the Sakya tradition. Then that's why most of our teachings, they come from the different lineages. And what Tsongkhapa did is like restructure, or he did a reform, you know, of the teachings in Tibet. And basically what he did is what the Buddha emphasized when he was alive, still alive, you know. The Buddha emphasized that morality or ethics is the base or the foundation for any practice, for anybody's Buddhist practice. That was what Tsongkhapa kind of reminded. Yeah? And the tradition that we follow now, that is the Gelugpa tradition, originally was called the Gandenpa tradition, because it was founded in the monastery. There's one kind of Tsongkhapa lived in that monastery, or founded that monastery. That is the Ganden monastery. Probably you heard about it. In Tibet, there were three main monasteries, the three pillars of Tibet. They also used to call them Ganden, Drepung, and Tsera. You know, Geshe-la studied at Tsera, for example, Geshe Gelug. You know? And there were the three main monasteries, especially of the Gelugpa tradition in Tibet. Now they are in the exile also. So the first of those was Ganden, where Lama Tsongkhapa lived. Then also they came at Tsera and Drepung. And nowadays they are the most very, very well-known monasteries. They were very well-known in Tibet. They were in Lhasa. Ganden was a little bit outside of Lhasa, the capital of Tibet. And Tsera and Drepung, they are also actually in Lhasa, kind of also outside a little bit, in the suburbs of Lhasa. Okay. So this is a general explanation of the tradition that we follow here. And basically it comes from also, you know, what Tsongkhapa, the teachings that we know are the Lam Rim. What we follow are the Lam Rim, or the stages of the path. Lam means path, and Rim means stages or levels. Yeah. And those teachings came from one Lama called Atisha. We have it here. So it's behind Buddha Shakyamuni, behind the statue of Buddha. Atisha was an Indian scholar that was invited to Tibet, kind to revive the teachings of the Buddha. You know, because there were kind of laws, there were some degenerations, we call it. So they invited a teacher to Tibet to restore the Buddha's teaching, kind of to restore again the whole package of teachings of the Buddha. And what a teacher did was he wrote the first Lam Rim, the first stages of the path, you know, that we are starting on Thursday. We're having a discussion group of this text on Thursdays here. And this text, The Lamp of the Path, kind of summarizes all the different stages that we need to follow in order to achieve enlightenment. The Lam Rim teachings are not kind of an introductory course, you know. You just say, okay, I'm interested in Buddhism, so come on to a Lam Rim course. It can be useful, but the Lam Rim actually is designed when you are decided, for example, say, okay, I would like to follow the Buddhist path. So, what I need to do to achieve the goal? To achieve the goal, to achieve enlightenment. So, you need to follow these steps. This is the Lam Rim, the stages of the path. So, within this tradition, within the Atisha's tradition, well, it was not called Gelugpa at that time. It was called, he founded the Kadampa, Kadampa tradition, used to call. Atisha's tradition used to be the Kadampa tradition, and at the center, actually. And later on, Tsongkhapa took those teachings, you know, and made extensive commentaries and explanation, and it becomes like the Gelugpa tradition, and the condemned part, like Luca later on. So this is a brief story about our tradition. And within our tradition, or generally speaking, I think when we study any spiritual path, it's important to have very clear the lineage or the teachers of the tradition that we are following, and also the teachings, because it's our spiritual path. It's, we are putting our trust or our future happiness in the hands of this tradition, of these people, of these teachers, and it's the most important thing we have, I think, because we all want to be happy, we all want to avoid suffering. So according to the Buddhist view, the development of the mind, or the inner practice, is the cause of real happiness, of lasting happiness. Not just temporal happiness, but lasting happiness. So if we really want lasting happiness, then we should know what are the causes. We should know which tradition or which spiritual path should we trust on to develop these causes. So there are very serious spiritual paths, as you know. There are also someone not very serious, probably, or teachers. So that's why the Buddha said we need to check out. We need to be very clear. We need to be very sharp. You know, have a sharp mind in order to trust, you know, in one spiritual path. So this is a little bit about our tradition. And within the Gelug tradition, when Buddhism started arriving to the West, there came many teachers, still coming, many teachers. And some of those groups was founded by Lama Yeshe and Lama Sopa Rinpoche. Lama Yeshe, that we have his picture here. Lama Yeshe behind. Under His Holiness, no? Could speak Spanish? Yeah. If I get some doubts, then I can ask you. Yeah? Okay. Okay. And then we have Lama Sopa Rinpoche here, in the upper part. So there were the founders of our organization, that is the FPMT that Kadampa Center is part of. So they were one of the first, especially Lama Yeshe, but both Lama Sopa Rinpoche, they were one of the first Tibetan lamas who used to teach to Westerners and teach in English. Probably Trungpa Rinpoche was the first, I don't know. And then Lama Yeshe, I think, started teaching to the Westerners. And those of you who have known or have heard about Lama Yeshe or seen some videos or meet him, actually, you can probably remember his English was very particular. Yeah? Lama Yeshe's English. But somehow he managed to communicate. That's an interesting point. You know, probably was not a perfect drummer, but somehow he managed to communicate. So this is kind of really, really encouraging for me, or for probably when I talk to the Tibetan lamas sometimes. You know, just look at Lama Yeshe, you know, he was very kind of sure, you know, what he was saying, you know. Even he didn't care about the grammar or about speak perfect English, but kind of was able to communicate. I remember there was one story that one of the students, Western students, came to Lama Yeshe, came with Lama Yeshe at Kopan Monastery. And probably you are related with this word that is guilt. Probably not. I don't know. The guilt, this word that is common in the West. So Lama Yeshe noticed it. We had this kind of sickness, illness, mental illness about guilt. And so one of the nuns came to Lama Yeshe once, complaining about my practice. I'm getting, I'm not practicing well, and I did this and I did that. It's a guilt trip. So Lama Yeshe replied. She told me, Lama Yeshe replied, "You don't guilty, dear. Better meditate." Able to understand, right? Not perfect grammar, but kind of you got the message. And so Lama Yeshe started what we call the FPMT, the organization, and it's out of his kindness that we have all the different centers, directly or indirectly. And it's a depending arising, Lama Jesus kindness and all the Western interest, understanding and energy, enthusiasm, etc. And out of his kindness, you know, we got the FPMT, and in a way, I think we are all, can say, students of Lama Jesus. Yeah. And then during the first years, Lama Jesu they established the monastery in Kathmandu called Kopan Monastery. Probably some of them you have been there. They have a famous course on November, the November Lamrim course, 1 month meditation and teachings. And Lama, at the beginning, Lama Jesu and Lama Sopa Rinpoche used to teach that course. They were so kind because they learned the language, mostly English, the Westerners. And they started teaching the Dharma. And at the beginning, they were very criticized because, within the Tibetan community for teaching Westerners, because they thought that Westerners were kind of barbarians.
Yeah.
So they were very criticized, so they went and asked permission to His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Lama Jesu and Lama Sopa Rinpoche went to ask permission, could we teach the Westerners? And His Holiness gave permission. He said, of course. So, normally the story said that the Tibetan society used to say, the Westerners, they cannot understand Dharma. If you teach to them, they cannot understand. You're wasting your time. They used to tell Lama Jesu and Lama Sopa Rinpoche. And then Lama used to say, they are intelligent. They can understand, what I say. So it was out of his kindness, right? Teaching to Westerners. And he said also that Lama Jesu used to, his wish since he was a little boy was, may I bring the Dharma to the people that don't know about it. That was Lama Jesu's wish. May I bring it, since he was a little boy. Yes. Then later on they started teaching at Kopan Monastery. So it's a monastery located in Kathmandu, one of the hills in Kathmandu. And at those times, with 1970s probably, as Lama Sopa Rinpoche said, Kopans used to be less than one star monastery. Now people go to Kopan now, and Rinpoche said it looks like 10 stars monastery. And even we complain, because we need to share rooms. And when we go to the course, we need to share rooms, with two or three people, maybe more. And sometimes we want our individual room, we complain. Yeah. So that's what Rinpoche's reply, At the beginning, we used all to sleep at the Gompan. So they started teaching these famous Kopan courses at November, 1 month Kopan courses of meditation. And the students used to call Lama Jesu used to call Lama Jesu the sun, and they used to call Lama Sopa Rinpoche the moon. They used to call them like that. And basically, the teachings, Lama Sopa Rinpoche started teaching on the Lamrim, the stages of the path, and Lama Jesu also helped him, but can kind of lead other teachings, especially I think Tantra, focuses on Tantra, Lama Jesu. So that's how it began, and suddenly those all these mostly hippies students that came to Kopan ran out of money, or their visa expired, or something happened. So they needed to start going back to their own countries, the West. And they suddenly can you imagine arriving from Nepal, wearing robes, shaved hair, finding another tradition, whatever, you come back to your own culture. But probably the problem is not the culture, but kind of without any support, no friends to practice with you. So they started gathering, getting together, kind of to try to meditate, some of them. So they say, Lama Jesu, why you don't come to the West to teach? And then we kind of start some meditation centers. Then Lama Jesu accepted. They came with Lama Sopa Rinpoche, they came together. And I'm not sure it was first to Australia or to America. I'm not sure.
He went to
France.
Mm-hmm. Naropa Institute was just the very first summer of Naropa Institute, mm-hmm.
that time Naropa was just meeting at the summer temple. So Trungpa Rinpoche invited him to come with Ram Dass and Bhagwan Dass and some other people there. And I didn't go. That was 1972. But I heard afterwards how the Lama Yeshi and Lama Zopa were in Boulder, where I went to college myself.
Oh.
So from that point then, they went to California.
Oh, thank you. So they started coming to the West and starting teaching, and then the students said, "Well, we're going to start a center." They say, "They asked Lama Yeshe, why could you give permission or blessings to start a center?" I think the first one was in Australia, the Chan Resting Institute, probably the first one. Yeah. So Lama Yeshe said, "Get permission." I said, "Okay, but this is going to be your baby. You need to take care of him, you know, and you need to feed it, and then to, you know, that's how you need to treat the center. Yeah? That's going to be your center, but you need to take care of him. And as you are doing here at the Kadampa Center, right, you are taking care of the center, it needs a lot of care, attention, and enthusiasm, yeah? So that's how it started. And then later on, Lama Yeshe manifested or passed away in 1984. And kind of, they were not expecting that, as neither of us is expecting our death, probably. So he passed away in 1985, and then Lama Zopa Rinpoche, that was kind of co-leading or co-founder with him, with the FPMT. By that time, they already had different centers. You know? I think it was Vajrapani here in California, Chan Resting Institute in Australia, Manjushri Institute in England. Lama Yeshe passed away in 1984. But the funny thing, some stories I've heard is that he kind of survived 10 more years, something like this. You know? He had some bad heart condition, and then he came to survive 10 more years. You know? The doctor said, "Okay, next year, you know, you're kind of out, you know, then 10 more years." Well, anyway, they're very interesting stories I probably can talk about later on about Lama Yeshe, I've heard. So Lama Yeshe passed away in 1984, and Rinpoche, Lama Zopa Rinpoche, was already planning to go for a life retreat, you know, for his entire life, you know, for retreat. Okay, now I can go to the retreat, Rinpoche said, you know. No? He was planning to go into Laodo when he was born in Nepal, and to do his long life retreat. Yeah. So suddenly, you know, I heard a couple of stories about it, but not sure. So anyway, the important point is that he didn't do the retreat. And I think as a request of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, he took over the FPMT, the spiritual direction of the FPMT. And he was quite young at that time. So he started, kind of continued teaching, and now, after all these years, you know, he's still here, and we're going to have his visit here next August. So, some things I would like to share about Rinpoche also, and about his style of teaching, that probably will be useful, you know, for those who doesn't know you or doesn't know him, or for those who does know him. Rinpoche, as I mentioned earlier, was born in Nepal, in kind of the border with Tibet, in the Himalayan region, close to the Mount Everest. The region is called Laodo. And he was recognized as the incarnation of one meditation, one person that does meditation, in the caves, one yogi. Of the region called the Laodo Lama Kunsang Yeshe, and he was from the Nyingma school, the Nyingma tradition. So Rinpoche was born at that village, Laodo, and it is said that when he was a little boy, he used to go and how do you say when the boy crawl. He used to crawl outside the house. Say, "I'm gonna go to my toward face. I mean, kind of facing the cave, he was in his previous life, kind of trying to go back to the cave. I want to go there, and this is my home. So, and also it said, Rinpoche has said that when he was a little boy, he used to play with the children in the village, and he kind of used to, those were their games. He used to sit down on the rock. Rinpoche used to sit down on the rock, and then pretending that he was giving Dharma teachings and initiations, you know, to the little children. So he's a dumb brother with a rug, you know, and said, "This is the bell." And then the teacher, the students, the friends were sitting there, you know, kind of hearing. And I was pretending to be reading a text. Rinpoche said, "I didn't know how to read at that time." Reading a text, you know. Those were our games, he said. And there was one story of Rinpoche that he mentions it. He likes to tell this story. He was one of his, I think it was his first encounter with Westerners. Yeah? He used to be with his uncle, kind of going on a trail in Nepal. He was on the shoulders of his uncle. So suddenly an avalanche came. An avalanche. Yeah? Avalanche? An avalanche came. And Rinpoche said, "I was a little boy, I just remember I screamed, I fell down. I was there. My uncle was there. All the food, all the people were with us. Everything was a mess. You know, after that, we were on the way to our town. So finally, we kind of survived, and then we arrived to town. And Rinpoche saw some Injis. Injis, the Tibetans call Inji, is the word for Westerners. Inji. And I think even in Tibetan, when they refer to the English language, they say Inji something. Yeah? So Inji refers to Westerners. Yeah? It was funny, you know, because the Tibetans, they say, actually, in the Tibetan language, they have Tibetans, they're called Popa. They have also, and they have two other nationalities that they distinguish, three actually. Yeah? There's Chinese, you know, they call the people, Jamil, the people with the black clothes, you know, the Chinese. No? And then Jakarta are the Indians, you know? The people with the white clothes. No? The rest of us are Injis. So Rinpoche came back to his village and he saw those Injis. And he said, "I would like to go, you know," because he said, I since the beginning I was attracted to their language," Rinpoche said. To their language, you know? They used to speak kichi 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 kichi. So he asked permission to his uncle to bring some potatoes to the Westerners, and the uncle said, "No, you shouldn't." "Oh, please, please, Rinpoche, you know, please," starting like little boy, you know, "please, I want." The little boys, you know, insisting. So he said, "Okay, fine, do whatever you want," you know. So he took the potatoes and started running towards the Westerners. And he was crossing a bridge, a rope bridge, made out of ropes. And suddenly, somehow, he was running. And the bridge kind of like this. And then he fell to the river, very cold. And then Rinpoche said that he thought another time, "Oh, I think I'm going to die." Not a little boy, you know, because inside, "I think I'm going to die." You know? And then suddenly he didn't die because his uncle saw that, and he ran away straight away, you know, to pick him away, to get out of the river. And later on, probably he received some punishment. I don't know. So, kind of those were the first encounters with Rinpoche with the Westerners, you know, in this region of Nepal. There's another story of Rinpoche that I remember. He got a watch, very nice watch. And he was very attached. He was a little boy, a little kid. He was very attached to the watch, obviously. You know? And I'm manifesting probably many attachment to the watch as a little kid. And so Lama Yeshe took his watch. You know, said, "Okay, can I see it?" And then said, "Yeah, okay." Then we said, "Look at my watch." And Lama Yeshe said, "Oh, okay." And Lama Yeshe put it aside, kind of kept the watch, Lama Yeshe. Then Rinpoche, she left, crying and crying and crying. I think for the next week, Rinpoche said, I was crying, you know, for one entire week, you know. I ran around, I was, then later on, some years later, Lama Yeshe asked him, you know, remember that time, you know, when you were crying the whole week? Oh, yeah. I said, why you were crying? Lama Yeshe asked Rinpoche. Rinpoche said, oh, because you took my watch. You know? And then Lama Yeshe said, oh, so you were attached to your watch. You know? He pulled a box. You know? He said, here it is. You know? Give it back after some years. So it was a good lesson, right? And so now, now Rinpoche travels all over the world, visiting the different centers, and he's very close to His Holiness the Dalai Lama, of course, to Westerners. Kind of very good news from us, from kind Tibetan Lama that started teaching to us, you know? And now, you know, I would like to share something about Rinpoche a little bit more about his teaching style. That probably will be useful to you, you know, to get the best that we can. So first of all, I think Rinpoche, as many other Tibetan teachers, many other teachers are, is a living example of the teachings. Let's take an example about Lamrim. You know? We can read in the Lamrim, or in the teachings, we can read, you know, about the precious human rebirth. We can read about karma. We can read about refuge, about bodhicitta, you know, about emptiness. And we have excellent, especially now in English translations, about Buddhist literature. But in Buddhist terms, we consider that a tradition is alive if there are living examples of the practice. If there is a lineage, a kind of vivid or alive lineage, you know, that they keep the teaching not just in their minds or in the books, but kind of they practice the teachings. That's a living tradition, right? So we consider a dead tradition when there is no longer practice of it, yeah? Or the practice has been broken. Yeah? Let's say, as an example, let's talk about the great Egyptians. Egypt, you call? Yeah, Egyptians. Yeah, wonderful. They were wonderful architects, yeah? Mathematicians, astronomers, and all these things. Yeah? For example, in my case, yeah, when I talk about them, when I think about the Mayans, Mexico, yeah? And many other cultures. Yeah? What they share, they were wonderful cultures, but we cannot find living examples. Yeah? Or we can find, probably we can find all the information. If we are lucky, we can find the information, reading the information could be written in books. Yeah, and but that doesn't mean that it's a living tradition. That's the big difference. Yeah? That's why that's kind of why in Buddhism there's a big emphasis, not just to learn, but also to practice. Right? To be part of the tradition, or kind of maintain the tradition alive. And that's how, from my point of view, Rinpoche and other lamas do that. Yeah? Let's say Rinpoche, we can read about the precious human rebirth. You know, that means not to waste our life in, you know, stupid things. You know, going here. And I mean, I can read about it personally, but in the practice, I need, sincerely speaking, you know, I waste a lot of time in things that will not be helpful. You know? And when I see, for example, I see Lama Sopa Rinpoche, I don't. Kind of, it's hard to see, you know, some minute or second, you know, that he's wasting. You know? So this is kind of the living example of what I'm trying to talk about it. For example, we talk about karma, cause and effect. Oh yeah, karma sounds logical. You say, yeah, cause and effect, causes and conditions. But karma, real, the teaching of karma is referring to kind of be really aware of our actions and restrain from negative actions. And cultivate positive actions. This is karma. This is the teaching of karma. Put it into practice. So again, you can see in the Rinpoche, you know, kind of living example. And talk about death and impermanence. No? Also, no doubt about it. I remember recently we had a retreat in Mexico with Rinpoche. It was 10 days retreat last April. And there was in a Jesuit monastery outside of one of the big cities there. Very nice monastery. And there were cells, individual cells that used to belong to the monks. They used to live there. And somehow Rinpoche was in the... There were four floors of the building. Yeah? Rinpoche was on the upper floor. And somehow the next day one student came. Yes, and he told me, you know, oh my God, you know, I heard at 4 in the morning, what was going on at 4 in the morning, you know, 4 or 5, I heard some bells, you know, tan, 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 ring, you know, in one of the rooms. So I was Rinpoche doing some kind of puja practice. Yeah? I also heard it. So he said, well, and this normally, you know, I don't say too much about this, you know, because kind of the respect to your teachers is kind of personal. No, you don't go outside and you know, go, oh, you know, this is a Buddha, and you kind of, you know, how do you say, give headache to the people with your teaching, to your teachers, right? You know, that sounds fanatic, you know? So that's why I'm going to repeat what this person said, you know? So this student came, he said, no, for me there is no doubt. I said, doubt about what? About Rinpoche has realized the path. I said, why? Why do you think that? Do you know his mind? No? I ask him. Because sometimes we get very emotional. You know? And say, well, you know, obviously he has realized renunciation. Is it? 5 in the morning practicing, you know? Renunciation. You know? At least some of great renunciation. Obviously you can see also he has realized bodhicitta, the way he cherishes me. He treats me or other people. And he was teaching, the retreat was about lambrim, generally speaking, but mostly the retreat was about emptiness. The whole, the 10 days, emptiness. So in that way, he had some experience about, you need to have some experience about emptiness in order to teach. You know, it's not kind of very easy, probably. So, this opportunity, you know, that we can give us the opportunity to receive teachings from these teachers that embody the teachings. It's great, you know, it's wonderful. But also, we need to be aware of some things. First of all, we need, I will advise, you know, not to be very picky, you know? Not to be very, kind of, not too critical, you know? Not to complain too much. You know? Because, of course, all different teachers have different styles. Some styles fits with us, some styles doesn't fit with us, some styles we have karma, so we have karmic connection with some, we don't have with some other either. So the important thing is, from our part, try to be open to learn something. We can learn from everybody, you know, especially, you know, when we listen to the Dharma, we can learn from the Dharma, and also for the presentation of the Dharma. As Lama Yeshe, I heard that Lama Yeshe used to say, Dharma is not a democracy. He said, so why? He noticed that in the West also, you know, that we are kind of democrats. Not democrats about like the party, you know, here. Democrats in the way that we like to vote and to be consensus all together. Lama Yeshe said, Dharma is not a democracy in the sense that, okay, who votes that karma exists? You know? Okay. Who agrees, you know, karma exists, you know? Okay, if everybody believes that it exists, you know? Not like this, you know? So, somehow when we listen to the teachings, we can get some idea, you know, of what the Dharma is proposing, of telling us, you know? I think that it's not that we don't have to be analytical, creative, you know? Yeah? That doesn't mean it's not a democracy. That means that we should listen, and then with all these teachings, if we sound logical, we can try to implement, and here comes kind of the creativity, you know, to implement it in our daily lives. So, one advice I would like to share with you about the Rinpoche's teaching is that don't be attached to your time, you know. because also, it's an excellent meditation on impermanence, yeah? On impermanence, and on emptiness, yeah? Because nothing is absolute. You can say, you know, concrete, solid, absolute. Yeah? So, I remember, as I tell you, you know, sometimes, you know, we'll we are waiting for one teaching, and then Rinpoche, I'm gonna teach about the three principal aspects of the path, you know. And he puts a book here. So. Well, but we have an initiation, you know? So this kind of thing. I will give an initiation, you know? So it's kind of. It's also nice to be flexible, generally speaking. Generally speaking, to be flexible, and especially with the teachings of Rinpoche, and. You know, do not take it for granted, because, as I told you, as I mentioned earlier, you know, all those lamas that came firstly to the West, they really make an effort to learn the language and to kind of bring the Dharma. It's not like Dharma, the Buddhist teaching, as you know, is not like they are thinking, the lamas were thinking there in Dharamsala or in India. You know, oh, okay, let's subdue these barbarian Westerners. We need to bring the missionary work of the Dharma there. You know, it's not like this. You know? It's like they came upon our invitations. We invite the teachers. It's not like there's no missionary work, or I'm not criticizing, but it's not like proselytism, you call it, right? It's not like this. You know, it's because we had interest and we invite them to come. It has been always like that, or should be like that, I think. So we invite them to come to the West, so they made this effort, besides all the problems that they had with the Chinese occupation and the loss of their culture, and to share their wisdom and their teachings, their life with us. And mostly some of them dedicated their whole life to us, to the Westerners. So this, when we remember this, some kind of sense of gratitude comes, right? Kukam, Guna writes. So sometimes we start, we are kind of very useful, as myself, you know, okay, you know, the teaching will be from 11 to 12, and it gets to 12:01. I need to go to my football, to the movies, so I have an appointment. You know, how dare he? You know, taking 10 times of my time, 10 minutes of my time. You know, how dare he? You know, he's not aware. You know, that I'm tired and I have a football game now, or I have a whatever. You know, you know, the mind starts wandering. You know, and it's an excellent opportunity to observe our mind, to see that it's a habit that we have. It's not just because of Rinpoche is teaching longer or whatever. It's the habit that we have of being impatient, probably. No? So, as long as we continue with this habit, it will never end. Will never end. You know what the Buddha said? You know, because we are kind of giving strength to this habit. No? Again and again, cultivating this habit of being impatient. So it becomes easier and easier to become impatient or angry or attached, isn't it? If so, kind of our mind is funny, because it says, okay, you know, I know to practice, I know it's good to practice patience, you know, but now I just can't, you know, because I need to these things to be done, you know, I just can't, you know, this moment, you know? The next time I will, you know, but now, you know, just forgive me, you know, I can't, you know? We keep going like this, you know? I remember one time maybe you heard about the Nalanda Monastery in France, huh? One of our monasteries. And I was there. I went to the supermarket with one of the monks to chop things for the monastery. So we were waiting on the queue or the line, you know, to pay. And it was a long, kind of long line. So we need to wait. And then the monk turned to me and said, okay, you know, that's a good time to practice patience. And then all the people from the line kind of turned to us like, oh, are you crazy? What are you talking about? You know, these people, we are in a hurry. And this so, first of all, you know, it's a good chance not just to listen to the Dharma, to listen to the teachings from Rinpoche and kind of see his example, but also to practice from our side. You know, practice patience and practice humility, right? Also, I'm telling you about the language, because I kind of had the same problem with me, probably, so I apologize. But Rinpoche, as you know, English is not his first language. So, there are some times that you need to make an effort to understand. Yeah? Make an effort to understand, like all of us. So I appreciate your effort to understand myself, but as we all appreciate, for example, we travel to other places and we don't speak the language, how useful it is, you know, when people kind of pay attention to us and try to help us. Even they cannot understand, even we don't speak their language, but they are willing to help us. How does it feel? Feel gratitude, you feel great. Oh, this pencil is very kind. And how does it feel when you go to a, let's say from metro subway station, you know, you're trying to figure it out where you're so confused and you're scared and you're learning the language, and then you ask to somebody, what are you talking? I cannot understand you. I cannot understand you. That makes you feel terrible. Yeah. Sometimes, you know, we appreciate when people make effort to understand us, so we can try to develop, you know, this also habit, this effort, this kind of attitude to understand others, the way they speak. You know, especially here, I think on the stage you have also probably this, you have a lot this, you face a lot with this situation, you know, because there are a lot of immigrants here, a lot of people that are not, their mother language is not English. So you need to make an effort to understand, you know. Sometimes I, with some of my friends, you know, Americans or British monks, you know, I'm talking to them in English, and they say, what? You know, I say, well, sometimes I love my patience. I say, well, you don't make an effort to understand myself, you know. Oh, so it's kind of good, you know, try to understand, you know. And Rinpoche does not teach also in a very traditional way, which is also useful for us in the West. Because it's like Lama Yeshe also, you know, they try to bring the experience of the teachings, the practicality of the teachings, which is very important also. It's important to study the text, also to bring up the practicality. So they can combine both. And this is useful because you say, oh, okay, you know, he's talking about the Four Noble Truths. Oh, I heard that thousands of times. I know the Four Noble Truths, you know. Why he doesn't talk about anything new, you know? The three principal aspects of the path. Oh, again? Then I'm impermanent. So I'm gonna die. You know, I know I'm gonna die. You know, why is he talking about? You know, kind of. We need to realize that until we don't have the what we call the realization, as Geshe Lakshya says, you know, the realization of coffee. Okay. The realization kind of means that automatically it comes without effort. So until we don't have the realization, then we need to meditate again and again, as Lama Tsongkhapa says. No, in his Lamrim Chenmu, he says, until when we need to study and practice, he said, until we reach enlightenment, until we reach Buddhahood. So, if Rinpoche repeats something again and again, it's probably because we are not hearing, we are not listening. We can hear but not listen. It has to go inside, it needs to go inside a little bit. And thank you for reminding me that. Yeah, I was thinking, there's something else. Yeah, that's true.
He had TB when he was little, very badly.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably still has some scarring from that, so he coughs a lot.
Mm-hmm.
A lot.
Mm-hmm. So this is also a good thing to mention, because what's your name?
Wendy.
As Wendy says, you know, Rinpoche coughs a lot. And, well, it depends. Sometimes he doesn't. You know, it depends. Sometimes I'm here, you know, in the teaching he doesn't. But sometimes he does a lot. Or sometimes I don't know if I get used to or whatever. I don't know. So please don't bring any medicine. He has tried plenty, you know. Or don't bring any, how do you sell this, candies, caramel, cough caramel. This won't help either. Either or either?
Either.
Okay. And I've heard some interesting stories about this, about the coughing. But first we need patience, you know, and also, actually, I think that when there is a translation from Rinpoche into other language that is not English, kind of people don't notice too much. They don't notice too much the coughing because they had a simultaneous translation. And you know the translator is not coughing, so they just get the translation directly. You know of what Rinpoche is saying. Say, so, oh wow, you know. But sometimes you know the effort consists, you know, in trying to put together the sentence between the coughs, you know,
yeah.
Or the main idea between the coughs, yeah. And then you can get, you know, you can get good messages. So I heard one story that Rinpoche coughs. I asked, you know, why, you know. People ask, wonder why he coughs. You know, one is because he had TB, as Wendy said, when he was junk, hati B, tuberculosis, you call it? Mm-hmm. Tuberculosis. I remember what Rinpoche said. When I was, one time he said, I was in Buxa, in one of the refugees camps in India. When first the Tibetans came out of Tibet, you know, they went to Buxa, this camp, which used to be a prison when Mahatma Gandhi was and Pandit Nehru was. And Rinpoche was saying, well, I had a little cell and I had TB. And I thought, oh, he had TV, you know, television. And I thought, have to be. You know, oh well, that wouldn't be so bad, you know. Books are with something. Yeah. So one of the reasons he coughs is because he had TB, tuberculosis. And the other one, I heard that, you know, according to the teachings, we call about the karma, we talk about karma, cause and effect. And we talk about one of the results of having abandoned the Dharma. That means that, you know, kind of give up Dharma teachings. Having been taking refuge and all these things, you know, to abandon the Dharma, you know. One of the causes of this is to not be able to hear or listen to the Dharma in the future. You create the causes not listening to the Dharma in the future. You know? So, I've heard the stories that Rinpoche, you know, in the big audiences, sometimes in littles probably, he coughs a lot. No? And then going and going. There's one story about this, but let me finish this. And one of the reasons is that he's helping us to purify this action of having abandoned the Dharma before. No? So we have created the causes not to hear the Dharma. So in the meantime, you know, kind of purifies this, help us to purify. This is one of the explanations I've heard. Then that could be useful probably for some of you, you know, to think about this. At least you get something positive, you know, and not thinking, oh, I know, I can't coughing. You know? Think I'm purifying. You know? Then the second one I've heard also is that as he travels a lot and gives a lot of teachings and especially initiations, tantric initiations and commitments, and many people, a lot of people that take their commitments kind of sometimes don't follow it or follow a little bit, and so kind of affects the life of the teacher also. You know? So I've heard also this. But probably I will try to think better about the first one, about the karma. So there was one story that one friend told me. There's one center in Wisconsin called Deer Park Center with Geshe Sopa, Geshe Lundru Sopa. One of Rinpoche's teachers lives there. And normally Geshe Lundru Sopa teaches every summer, a summer course there, Deer Park. So Rinpoche was there. He tries to attend the teachings. And sometimes they ask Rinpoche to give a talk or give some teachings. So Rinpoche went, you know, one day to give a talk. And also the Gompa is packed. You know, I don't know why some always packed, you know, when Rinpoche is teaching. So Rinpoche came and started teaching. And one of the students, very young student, invited. We need to finish at 12? Sorry, I'm going to finish. This is the end, okay? I thought it was 12. So Rinpoche was attending the teachings, right? So this student invited his parents that were not Buddhist, and he was very excited. Oh, you know, Rinpoche is teaching, come on to the teaching, blah, blah, blah. So obviously, you know, the parents came. That's the Gompa, not very comfortable for Gompa, pack, you know, they made an effort for the son. You know? Then Rinpoche started teaching, you know? Of course, coughing, you know? And then 15 minutes. So, so kind of talking compassion, compassion, so started, you know, going on and on, and then, you know, finally he gave the talk, of course, and then at the end, the student was kind of very, very happy, you know, oh, you know, the talk was wonderful, this and that, went to his parents, you know? What do you think about the talk, you know, he got very excited, and the parents, you know, don't you think it was a little bit repetitive? And then, what do you mean repetitive? You say it was very. So anyway, these things is what I wanted to share. So maybe we can end here, unless you have one question, probably one question. Or,
If you don't have incense, Rinpoche will cough less because he's gotten very allergic to it over the years. Mm-hmm. Maybe just a little, not too much. Mm-hmm. Because everybody's holding incense, that will make it worse.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to share a little suggestion. See, I had difficulty understanding Rinpoche when I first heard him teach, so I decided the second time I would take notes, just write down everything. And because my mind would wander so much during the breaks in the teaching. And I took notes throughout a teaching, and at the end of the teaching I thought, I didn't get very much. And I went back and read my notes, and they were absolutely clear. They were perfect. Every sentence that had broken had been finished. They're beautiful. It was a beautiful teaching that I couldn't hear at the moment, but I was writing them down. So I suggest, Don has always suggested to me, to take notes, and it helps you keep your mind on the teaching. So I would pass that on to everyone else.
Thanks, Joanna.
Thank you, Joanna. So shall we dedicate? Okay.
Please turn to your prayer book on the back of the yellow sheet. We'll be saying Shanti Deva's dedication and the long life prayers for His Holiness, the Dalai Lama, and Lama Zopa Rinpoche. If there's anyone who you'd like to have remembered during the dedications, please say their name now.